Hello, and welcome to the Down the Middle podcast. I'm your host, Michael Rhodes, private wealth advisor with UBS Private Wealth Management in Naples, Florida. I can be reached at 239-277-3616.
Today, we're very fortunate to have with us one of our very special UBS advanced planners. Her name is Catherine McDermott. We work with Catherine with all of our high net worth clients discussing anything having to do with estate planning and specifically items for Florida residency, helping people establish their trusts and estates for their heirs. So, Catherine, thank you for joining us and welcome. And why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background?
Great. Thanks so much for having me here today. This is a real pleasure. So my name again is Catherine McDermott. I am a member of the UBS Advanced Planning Team. I have been here since 2017. My role each day and every day is to review the plans that our clients have put into place, including their estate plan, their tax plans, residency plans, and work with my clients, their attorneys and accountants, to make sure those plans reflect our clients' current wishes and are done in the most tax-efficient way and really embody all their goals and objectives.
Terrific. Thank you. Well, Catherine, let's talk about Florida residency. What are really the most important steps that clients come to you should take in order to claim Florida residency? And what are your thoughts on homesteading?
So when a client wants to make Florida their permanent residence or domicile, they have to show evidence that their intention has been enacted, that they're really trying to make Florida home. And to do that, they're going to have to establish a number of factors that an auditor would potentially be looking at. For instance, do they behave as if the home in Florida is their real home, or do they behave as if the residence they have in a high tax state is really their domicile? And some of those behaviors that are going to be looked at, what is the value and size of the residence in Florida versus the residence in the high tax state, if they still maintain a residence in the high tax state? What actions have they taken to remove themselves from the high tax state? You know, was there a moving company that moved items near and dear to Florida, for instance? Have they established roots in Florida? These factors might be, you know, have they joined clubs in Florida? Have they obtained a driver's license? Have they registered their car in Florida? Have they registered to vote in Florida? Have they established accounts with a bank or a financial advisor in Florida? Have they taken steps to redo their estate plan as a Florida domiciliary? And have they filed an affidavit of domicile in Florida? Sometimes clients will also look to homestead their home in Florida, and we should talk specifically about that.
What are the advantages of homesteading?
So Florida has a unique law regarding homestead, and it is unique. The other states may have homestead rules as well. And if you're moving from a state that has homestead rules, it would be important that you no longer homestead in your prior state of residence. And if you're looking at homesteading in Florida, you would be potentially aware of the three advantages of homesteading here. One has to do with property taxes. Over time, a homesteader in Florida will be, if you homestead your property tax increases will be limited over time to a 3% of its assessed value each year. And that's a definite advantage over time. There will also be creditor protections afforded to the full value of your homesteaded residence that are very advantageous in Florida. And there are other rules related to who you can leave the home to, which are also impactful. And I'll talk separately about that in a minute. But there are certain restrictions on devise of homesteaded property to a spouse or to minor children that are really important when deciding whether to homestead a property in Florida. So it was generally the advice to homestead your property in Florida for these reasons. And it bolsters a domicile application. If you're really saying I'm a domiciliary of Florida, it would make sense that you would homestead the home, because in homesteading your home, you're saying this is my primary residence. I have not homesteaded any other house or residence in any other state or in Florida. This would be my primary residence. So that would bolster your argument that you've become a domiciliary of Florida. Recently, there have been certain cases, however, in which Floridians who owned a home, perhaps as a snowbird for a number of years in Florida, if they've owned that home for, say, 4 or 5 years, they may have owned that home in a period of time when that home appreciated a great deal in value.
Mm-hmm. And we've seen property prices come very high these days down here.
That's right. And so if you were a snowbird who owned your homesteaded property for a period of time, and you owned your Florida property that you didn't homestead for that period of time, and then you go in to homestead that property, we are seeing cases in which the property tax authorities are reestablishing the value of your property for homestead purposes at the new property valuation, and then allowing you to homestead the property, and it would then cap future increases in your property tax to that 3% I mentioned before. So it might actually cause a snowbird who has owned their Florida property for some years to have a large increase in their property taxes if they were going to homestead it after having owned it for some years. And so I'm cautioning clients to make sure they ask the property tax assessor if they've owned that property for some time and they would like to homestead it, what specifically would be the situation for them? And they might want to consult their accountant and attorney as well to see what they think would happen.
Thank you. So as you're meeting with clients, and I'm sure you've seen items that are left open, what are some of the red flags that you see the high tax state revenue departments looking for in order to trigger audits?
You know, I think there are several. I have clients who still retain properties in the high tax state and come to Florida. And as I said, if you establish a residency in Florida, a home here, you may buy a smaller residency or you might rent a residency, but you still own a home in the high tax state that is larger or which you have owned for many, many years, that certainly could be a factor that is in the negative column. When we are, you know, when we do think of this as sort of a scale, right? You want to have more factors and more positive factors that bolster your domicile in Florida argument and fewer factors in the negative column that sort of link you to the high tax state. So that's one area that we look at a lot. And the other area is, do you still remain active in a business or employment in the high tax state? That business, you might not be an employee anymore. Maybe you've retired, but if you are actively involved as a partner or a shareholder in a business in the high tax state, and by active involvement, how much time do you spend involved in that business in the high tax state? That too can be a negative factor in your domicile application. So, you know, some clients will gift shares in those businesses to trusts for family members, or they will retire or become a chairperson emeritus. And really, it's important how they spend their time. Are they willing to allow other decision makers who are still connected to that business in the high tech state to run the day-to-day business? Also, the day count. I think most clients are very familiar. If you're moving from a high tech state, you don't want to spend 6 months in a day, that 183 days in the high tax state. Do you have to spend it in Florida? It's better. The more time you spend in Florida is better, but you definitely do not want to spend it in the high tax state. So if you've left the high tax state and are a family that travels a lot, that's okay, as long as you're not in the high tax state for that 183 days. Better if you're in Florida for more of those days than you're in any other state, because it really shows your home. And again, those items near and dear, actually really important. Show that you had a moving truck that moved your trophies, your wedding album, your family photos, you know, those types of things. And where do you spend the holidays? Do you spend them here and at your home in Florida, or special occasions here in Florida?
Thank you. So let's turn the page a little. So as people become Florida residents and they start to think about their legacy and the next generation, what are some things that you've worked with clients on to help protect their legacy and make sure their estate is transferred to the next generation as efficiently as possible?
I think it's important that clients consider updating their estate plans when they move to Florida. And that's for a number of reasons. One, it would bolster the position that you become a domiciliary, because in the last will and testament in Florida, the first few lines will state, "I am a domiciliary of Florida." So that's a strong factor that you have. Clearly, your intention is to make Florida your home. But there are also unique rules and laws in Florida that would impact a client's legacy. And one in particular is that homestead. And so Florida homesteaded property, as I mentioned earlier, cannot be devised to just anyone or to a trust without having a spouse waive their right to homesteaded property. And so there's special language incorporated into Florida estate planning documents related to Florida homesteaded property. Many times I see clients who have moved from high tax states maintain their existing documents or have documents prepared by their advisors in the high tax state who may not practice every day under the laws of Florida. And those documents do not make mistakes related to homestead, which is a very quirky part of Florida law. So the four documents we generally recommend clients have established under Florida law would be their healthcare proxy, which is a document that allows an agent to make medical decisions for a Florida resident if they are not able to make those medical decisions for themselves. A durable power of attorney, which is a document that allows your agent to make business decisions for you if you're alive but unable to make business decisions. It's a durable document, which means it takes effect immediately. Florida doesn't allow springing powers of attorney. A last will and testament, and unique, somewhat unique to Florida, is that fact that many of our clients will have what we call a pour-over will and a revocable trust, which is a trust that has many of the terms in it that many of our clients might have if they only had a last will and testament in the state of their prior residency. So in Florida, we use a revocable trust to avoid probate and keep things out of the court system. As long as you've retitled your assets into that revocable trust, you can change it at any time, and it's fully revocable or amendable during your life. Once you pass away, it is irrevocable. We can create many different trusts for your loved ones that can protect them from creditors, such as divorcing spouses, protect your assets from estate tax, or do a lot of efficient tax planning with those types of trusts.
That's tremendous. That's excellent. What about for clients selling a business in a high tax state? What are some steps that people can take to try to avoid both state taxes and from an income perspective and on a potential sale?
So I think that gets, usually we work very closely with our clients' income tax accountant and their estate attorney on those types of transactions. And we spend a lot of time at UBS on pre-liquidity planning, and we like to start early. I think in the worst situation where it becomes most difficult to do tax efficient and efficient pre-liquidity planning are the cases that start really late in time. And sometimes that's unavoidable. An offer comes in, a client wasn't expecting it and wants to move on that offer very quickly. And so we can certainly adjust in those cases. But the best case plan started early. For instance, if a client establishes residency in Florida years ahead of a transaction, that's a better fact pattern than if they moved on week one and week two, they're selling their company. That's not a great fact pattern. But these are very nuanced situations. And even the business structure, the business nexus to the high tax state, for instance, if it's a real estate business with real estate in the high tax state, it may be unavoidable that there are going to be state taxes in the high tax state, no matter where the owner lives. But in other cases where it's a more of an intangible business with less of a nexus to the high tax state, planning early and might certainly help the client have the best tax outcome.
So the earlier, the better.
Yeah.
the more conversations up front, the more tax savings and benefit to the heirs will be possible.
Absolutely. And also working with a team of advisors that includes your financial advisor, their planner, their planning team, like our advanced planning team, your accountant, and your often your business attorney and your estate attorney and tax attorney. That team-based approach definitely leads to the best outcomes.
And I would say at UBS, that is one of our specialties where we really bring teams together to help solve client issues. So that was a very good articulation of that. Thank you. What are your thoughts finally really about charitable giving and how should clients think about that as they think about their legacy?
You know, I think in the context of residency planning, this is an often overlooked aspect, but what better way to bolster your argument that you become a domiciliary of Florida than to become engaged in philanthropy in your local community in Florida. And it's a great way to also to meet new people and just to become more embedded in the local community as well. So I've seen clients once they make the move, and of course, there's a lot of steps that we've discussed today in making the move. And once those steps are taking a care of, a lot of clients will become charitably engaged locally. And I think if you remain highly charitably engaged in the high tax state, it can become problematic if it's the only charitable giving you're doing is in your local community in the high tax state and you haven't made that shift to become engaged in Florida. So let's not overlook that, both from a lifestyle perspective and from the residency perspective.
So you get the best of both worlds.
Right.
Fantastic. Well, Catherine, you have given us so much to think about today. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And for everyone listening that would like to continue the conversation and be more specific to your situation, our team, the Murillo Rhodes Group, can certainly facilitate that. And we work with Catherine and our clients all the time. And we'd love to set that up and discuss with you. So thank you for listening. Have a great day.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review Client Relationship Summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.